Hi, I'm Larry Rifkin, and welcome to today's reading of USA Today for Tuesday, April the 9th. Their front page cover story is titled, Americans Shared a Powerful Moment During the 2024 Solar Eclipse. This is What They Saw, by Rick Jervis and Chris Kenning from USA Today, and they were in Eagle Pass, Texas. It was noon, and the cloud cover had been looming all morning. Alessandra Martinez, a seventh grade science teacher from this city in South Texas, peered up at the gauzy gray sky. She was sitting at the corner of the county airport, just outside Eagle Pass, just a couple of miles from the U.S.-Mexico border. Beside her stood a special telescope for a citizen-driven NASA science project to capture views of the sun during the eclipse, if they could see it. We're going to stay positive, Martinez said, turning to the team gathered around the scope. The sun will come out eventually. In just a few moments, the orb of the moon was set to cross the face of the sun, the rare phenomenon that has captivated human observers since the dawn of time, a total solar eclipse. That celestial alignment would be both precisely predictable and undeniably mysterious. Over the course of several hours, millions of people would fall beneath the moon's shadow as it swept across the continent at some 1,500 miles per hour. At the center of that path, however briefly, the midday sun would vanish entirely, the period of an eclipse known as totality. The arc of the event was plotted by astronomers years in advance. It would begin over the blue depths of the tropical Pacific and end on the gray swells of the North Atlantic. The longest moments of totality would arrive in western Mexico. Far more of the route, though, stretched from the flats of the Rio Grande Valley to the woods of northern Maine. Gauged by shared experience, this solar eclipse would be almost singularly American, and that American eclipse would begin right here for a small crowd at a small airport in a small town in South Texas at 10 minutes past noon local time. If only the clouds would part. Then, as if guided by some cosmic schedule, they did. Martinez, dressed in a T-shirt that proclaimed, "This totality rocks," donned her dark eclipse glasses and peered upward. The haze in Eagle Pass had cleared, and now, degree by imperceptible degree, the disk of the sun began to shift to a crescent. "There it is. There it is," she yelled. "First contact. It's begun." At age 41, Martinez already had pursued research around the world. She has been aboard a deep-sea drilling ship in the Indian Ocean as it tried to poke into the Earth's mantle. She studied climate change's impact on plants in the Arctic. She photographed the night sky aboard a ship in the Atlantic with the man who found the wreckage of the Titanic. But few of those things compared to the hushed darkness that fell across Maverick County International Airport. Last year, when Martinez heard NASA was looking for volunteers to help with the effort known as Citizen KATE 2024, the Continental America Telescope Eclipse, she jumped at the chance. Her team was one of more than 30 recruited by NASA to capture and record the eclipse. She had been eagerly awaiting the eclipse that would pass directly over her hometown. Eagle Pass, the backdrop for months of a standoff between state and federal officials over the treatment of asylum seekers, could use the positive headline, she said. As the two orbs, one light, one shadow, passed each other in time and space, the shapes and colors shifted along the path below. Eyes turned upward, both inside and outside the path of totality, from ranches in Texas, hill country, and blankets spread out in Washington on the National Mall. dozens of students spilled out of the Ida B. Wells Middle School in Washington, D.C., gripping cardboard solar eclipse glasses and chatting with excitement. "Why is the sun shaped as a moon?" one student asked after looking toward the sun. "Why is it not getting dark?" asked another. Teacher Troy Magnum, who the students call Mr. Mango, slowly explained the science behind the experience as he cautioned others to put on their glasses. Steps away at Whittier Elementary School, younger students put on their glasses and tilted their heads upward toward the sun behind the school. Off the coast of Mexico, chartered ships of various sizes carried eclipse chasers along the seas. Whereas landlocked observers could only travel where roads would take them, ship captains faced no such constraints. Passengers aboard the Holland America's Koningsdam cruise gathered on the top decks at 10 a.m. local time. The crew, guided by an astronomer on board, was set to adjust the ship's position meticulously to ensure the best possible view. Mexico had become the go-to spot for the eclipse's most dedicated chasers, some of whom have witnessed dozens of events around the globe. Each moment of totality was a notch in the lifetime scorecard. Another moment in that otherworldly shadow that provokes strong reactions among so many who see it. "I've seen people cry," said Paul Maley, a few weeks before the moment. At 76 years old and 30 total eclipses viewed, he is one of America's most accomplished umbrophiles. "I've seen them scream. I've seen them run around and just make wild exclamations." Maley organized two trips to Mexico so more viewers could do the same. Throughout history, those strange reactions have built both myths and memories among humanity. Various cultures imagined the sun was being devoured by a celestial animal, or that the darkness was an omen of doom. But not always. Historians say one recorded eclipse prompted an end to combat during an ancient Greek war. Some aboriginal cultures saw the eclipse as an amorous encounter between the sun and the moon. Modern times brought modern scenes. Outside Little Rock in Cincinnati, couples gathered Monday to marry in mass ceremonies as the eclipse turned wedding day to wedding night. In Indianapolis, crowds filled the famous Motor Speedway for a viewing event, and the freeways outside as well. State police warned that interstate rest stops were at or near capacity and would be shut down once full for the duration of the eclipse. In Carbondale, Illinois, officials of Southern Illinois University were joined by teams from NASA and Chicago's Adler Planetarium for an event that would host thousands. NASA would send up a pair of balloons to study the sun's corona. Below, on the field of the university's Saluki Stadium, a dance troupe performed between end zones painted deep maroon. The music, The Fifth Dimensions, let the sun shine in. In Evansville, Indiana, Amber and Cody Stallings had driven all the way from Atlanta with their infant daughter, Sadie. Amber said she had seen the 2017 eclipse, but nothing compared to what they saw on the banks of the Ohio River. "It's breathtaking and moving," she said. "It brought tears to my eyes." Sadie was strapped in a stroller as her parents shielded her eyes from the spectacle. "She won't remember it," they said, "but at least she can say she was there." The young family had already prepared themselves for the 400-mile drive home. "Were they worried about the traffic?" "Come on," Amber scoffed. "We're from Atlanta." Just after 3 p.m. local time, the total eclipse crossed a hayfield about 10 miles north of the small town of Spencer, Indiana, where dozens camped overnight near a tiny fishing lake ringed by hills. Some had driven from Wisconsin, Michigan, or Minnesota, looking to be near the center of the path and away from big cities. Still more arrived after changing plans, swapping out destinations in cloudy Texas for what turned out to be largely clear blue skies in Indiana. They set up cameras and telescopes in the shade of lifted tailgates. They waited in folding chairs. Fishermen, retirees, and college students from nearby Bloomington made fast friends, sharing special binoculars and passing out popsicles. As the sun became a crescent, the temperatures dropped from more than 80 degrees to over 70. An American flag that had been fluttering across the rural road hung limp as the wind died down. 30 seconds, someone yelled. Among the red buds and silver maples that fringed the hillsides, the light turned the color of ash. Circling turkey vultures took to the trees. Crickets and frogs began to chirp. People whooped, gasped, and yelled as they took off their eclipse glasses to see a black sun ringed with gold. Along the hills around the lake, the sky turned the orange-yellow of sunset in every direction at the same time. Oh my God, this is so cool, said Tim Watson, 60, a retired IT worker who drove from Madison, Wisconsin, with his brother Chris, 64, for their first total eclipse. When the sun came back out nearly 4 minutes later, another gasp went up. A wired world that could place the word totality into the collective vocabulary could just as easily track its darker reverberations. Hotel rooms and vacation rentals along the path were sold out or listed at astronomical prices. Good news, perhaps, for owners, challenges for travelers. Cities and counties declared states of emergency as they brace for floods of visitors and for weather conditions that might or might not harmonize. The Texas Eclipse Festival in Burnett County, 50 miles northwest of Austin, included bands and other events to begin Sunday and wrap up Tuesday. Instead, it was canceled Monday over weather concerns, including high winds, tornadic activity, large hail, and thunderstorms. Your safety is our top priority, festival organizers said on their website. In Oklahoma, a crash around 7:30 a.m. local time squeezed eastbound lanes on I-40, the major transcontinental highway, not far from several state parks that were hosting eclipse events. Multiple crashes were reported along I-35 around Waco, Texas, two in the path of totality. Across the country, last-minute watchers scrambled to drugstore counters in the hopes of finding a pair of protective eclipse glasses, and the American Academy of Ophthalmology issued warnings about the signs of retina damage in those who viewed without precautions. And even as the shadow could create a shared experience in fractious times, it could not blunt the many struggles of a nation. In Las Vegas, where the shadow reached 51% of totality, a gunman in a high-rise shot two people to death before taking his own life. In Kansas City, 89% shadow, a collegiate athletics body grappled with the politics of who exactly may play men's and women's sports. In the nation's capital, 87%, lawmakers wrestled with a patchwork of rules for social media. Despite such national shadows for many on Monday, American divides could not cleave one common, powerful experience. In Maine, in the eclipse's last moments in the U.S., Fred Grant watched the moon's shadow darken his hometown of Houlton. In the historic logging town near the Canadian border, 6,000 residents had braced for cloudy weather. Instead, they awoke Monday to the thrill of flawless blue skies. Grant, who owns a local radio station, a pizza place, and a movie theater, had been helping plan for this eclipse since 2017, when he watched the last total eclipse in the U.S. on his computer and discovered the next one would pass right through Houlton. "You've got to be kidding," he recalled. On Monday, visitors came from as far away as Hawaii and Europe. The town's hotels were booked. and some visitors parked RVs at a decommissioned Air Force base. The town square filled with music and food trucks. NASA officials set up to broadcast live from Houlton during a three-hour video stream of the eclipse across the country. Grant said that watching it from the square, surrounded by family and feeling blessed by rare good weather, made the experience as powerful as he could have ever imagined. I had pictured this moment for a long time, and I didn't really know how it'd feel, he said. It was very emotional. I really got choked up. It was overwhelming. For a moment, far outside any human control, two celestial lines had intersected. All the experiences beneath them had been part of a shared path. Then the two orbs in the sky parted ways, each again tracing its own separate arc through space. The darkness ended, leaving each person below to contemplate what remained in the light. From the sandwich shop to the radio airwaves, how the solar eclipse united a Vermont town. By Karen Weintraub, St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Crowds ballooned to about 15,000 people, more than doubling the population of this historic town Monday under an unseasonably cloudless sky. A sandwich shop that typically sells 300 sandwiches on a busy day made that many in its first hour and predicted that its five employees would end up making 1,000 sandwiches each before the day ended. Eclipse sugar cookies with buttercream frosting sold for $3 each, and people were lined up before noon at the Whirligig Brewing Pub, which had made a special ale in honor of the eclipse. Fire Chief Bradley Reed grew up two blocks from the center of town. He said it was the biggest crowd I've ever seen in St. Johnsbury. When forecasts began predicting beautiful weather for Monday, the town knew a lot of visitors would be arriving at this prime eclipse viewing spot about 48 miles south of the Canadian border. On the north end of Main Street, several families set up in Arnold Park to get some distance from the hordes. Katie and Mike Mayer had driven up from Bethlehem, Connecticut, about 5 hours away, so as not to miss the spectacle. We wanted to get the full effect, Mike Mayer said. The pair ordered plastic eclipse glasses ahead of time and brought coolers, full of coolers, with cheese, crackers, wine, and other nibbles. Katie Mayer remembered making box eclipse viewers in elementary school and has been fascinated by them since, but had never seen a total eclipse. Jim and Kim Cooper had come over from New Hampshire, their first time doing more than just driving through the town locals call St. J's. Their son had proposed to his girlfriend in Tennessee during the 2017 eclipse, and then had an eclipse-themed wedding. But the Coopers had never seen a total eclipse for themselves, so they decided to come to the closest place where they could be assured of a good view. Jeffrey Bro had seen that 2017 eclipse for himself and was so impressed that he convinced family members to join him this time. Bro's girlfriend, Nell Hawley, came up with him from Cambridge, Massachusetts. His brother Alex and his girlfriend, Diana Ventura, drove up from New York City, and his father Walter all came to see their first total eclipse. His mother had to watch from home in southern Vermont because she teaches kindergarten and couldn't get the day off from work. I would have been okay watching it in the yard, Walter said, though he would only have seen a partial eclipse from there. That's what you think now, Jeffrey answered. Talk to me in 2 hours. Shortly after the totality, as people began to stream back to their cars, Reed said he'd seen no problems so far. Everybody's been great. The Conaway family of Northfield, Massachusetts, had all played hooky from school on Monday to see the eclipse. Gary Conaway, a classroom helper in fourth grade, said it was worth missing school for this. Since I was a kid, I've always been interested in astronomy. To be able to enjoy this with my kids, I had to. A city kid, he was close to his grandmother, who lived on a farm and would show him the stars when he came to visit. Sarah Conaway, a pre-kindergarten classroom helper, designed and made shirts for the day for herself, Gary, and their sons Noah 10 and Seth 8, who both said school is important, but a solar eclipse is importanter. Noah, a fourth grader, loves astronomy like his dad and hopes to go to Mars someday. I never knew the moon could cover the sun. I thought it would be too small. Sitting in lawn chairs in the middle of Main Street, waiting for the totality, Peter Schweiger, Gretchen Steen, and their two sons, Arlo 10 and Braun 8, had the distinction of coming perhaps the least distance to view the eclipse, just two blocks. They could have watched from home, but then they would have missed all the excitement. Schweigert and Steen had both seen partial eclipses before, but never a total. I've heard it compared to the difference between riding in an airplane and jumping out of one. Mark Breen said it was everything he has ever described. He could watch and feel the darkness approaching. It was just astounding. He said he hopes the event will turn more children onto science. There is nothing like some kind of natural event to inspire kids, said Breen, who traces his own interest in meteorology to snow and ice storms in his upstate New York childhood. During his hour-long radio show, which included 1 minute and 31 seconds of totality, Breen and a co-host took calls from Brazil, Spain, California, and other locales, as well as one surprise call from his mother in Pennsylvania. Everybody was a community, he said. What else can you say? That's what humanity should be. No person is above the law. Special counsel tells the Supreme Court why Trump should be prosecuted by Maureen Gropp from Washington. No president before Donald Trump has suggested the Constitution grants him criminal immunity, and the Supreme Court shouldn't now find that it does, Special Counsel Jack Smith said on Monday, laying out his argument in a landmark case being argued later this month. Smith, in a legal brief to the Supreme Court, said granting Trump criminal immunity would be a radical legal precedent, citing examples from history that brought the U.S. to the edge of a constitutional crisis. Smith pointed out in his brief that President Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon precisely because he otherwise faced prosecution. Likewise, he argued, the special counsel that investigated the Iran-Contra affair considered whether President Reagan's actions were criminal. The absence of any such absolute immunity claim throughout our history weighs heavily against its novel recognition now, Smith wrote in the brief. The legal filing comes ahead of the Supreme Court's April 25th oral arguments in Trump's appeal of a decision that he's not immune from prosecution. Trump, the presumptive GOP nominee for president, who wants the Supreme Court to dismiss his indictment on federal charges, tried to steal the 2020 election, arguing that criminal prosecution presents a mortal threat to the independence of the presidency. The president cannot function, and the presidency itself cannot retain its vital independence if the president faces criminal prosecution for official acts once he leaves office, Trump's lawyers told the court last month in his major brief before the oral arguments. They'll get a chance to respond to Smith's arguments in their final legal filing before facing the 9 Supreme Court justices. 3 of those 9 justices were appointed by Trump when he was president, giving the court a conservative supermajority comprised of 6 people appointed by Republicans. Even if Trump loses his appeal, the Supreme Court may not reach a decision quickly enough for a trial to proceed in time for a verdict before the November election. Trump has offered the court an option to delay his trial further. For example, if the justices decide that immunity for acts taken while in office require a fact-based approach, such as whether Trump was acting in his official or personal capacity during his allegedly criminal acts, then they should send the case back to the lower courts to make that determination, including conducting any fact-finding necessary to the determination prior to any further proceedings in the case, his lawyers have argued. Trump would have to convince a court that his bid to use fake electors and a high-pressure phone call where he pressed the Georgia Secretary of State to find 11,780 votes were part of his official duties as president. But whatever the appeals court rules, the exercise would still delay his trial in the federal election case. Smith countered Monday that Trump's trial should not be postponed. Even if the Supreme Court finds that former presidents have some form of immunity that may apply to the charges against Trump, the district court can make evidentiary rulings and craft appropriate jury instructions. Trump could appeal those rulings, but only after the trial concludes. Huskies repeat. Connecticut cruises past Purdue to win the second national title in a row by Paul Meyerberg. Connecticut stands alone. Again, a balanced offensive effort and another dominant second half held the Huskies passed Purdue 75-60 to win the national championship for the second year in a row. UConn is the eighth program to go back-to-back and the first since Florida in 2006-07. To do so, the Huskies had to overcome another banner night from Purdue center Zach Edey, the two-time Big Ten Player of the Year, and just the third player in NCAA men's history to be named the Naismith Player of the Year multiple times. You can't even wrap your mind around it, Huskies coach Dan Hurley said. It just shows how hard this tournament is. What a special group of people and special coaching staff. The best group of players you could possibly do it with. Edey scored 16 points in the first half, bullying UConn sophomore Donovan Klingon and drawing the double-team attention when Klingon went to the bench with his second foul. But the Boilermakers went without scoring for the final 2 minutes and 18 seconds of the first half to send the Huskies into the locker room with a 36-30 lead. The halftime deficit was Purdue's first of the tournament. And as against Illinois in the Elite Eight and Alabama in the national semifinals, UConn pulled away in the second half with increased defensive intensity and an offensive barrage. A quick spurt coming out of halftime put the Huskies ahead 47-34 after Samson Johnson had a dunk with 14:30 left after a pair of free throws from Edey made it 47-36, the Huskies held Purdue without a field goal for more than 4 minutes. Well, that's it for today's reading of USA Today. I've been reading from their Tuesday, April 9 issue. If you have any questions about the articles I've read, call the Chris Listener Line at 860-727-9579. I'm Larry Rifkin. So long, until next time.